Good morning. This is Chip Ridge. We have a really special guest today. I'm excited. We're recording this on May 12th. And the significance of that date is May 11th has been quite an interesting day in the crypto space. So having Ross on here is super timely, and I think will be a very interesting conversation and can shed some light on what's going on today. So without further ado, I'm going to have Ross Johnson with Scylla Money API introduce himself, and then we're going to jump right into a conversation to talk about what's going on.
Hey,
thanks, Ross, for joining us.
Thanks, Chip. It's an honor to be here. I'm glad we can make this happen. You know, you and I have had some great conversations in the past. I'm excited to dive even deeper on this topic. Also, just want to say congrats to you. I read about Millennial Title helping facilitate the first real estate transaction using Bitcoin in Louisville.
Thanks. That was a good one. So just give us a brief introduction on your background and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, you know, it's been a winding journey for me. I think life kind of has a way of getting you to the places that you want to be, but that's not to say I'm an expert in crypto or real estate. I'm kind of learning just like everybody else. But for me, I've always been interested in real estate. I grew up in Central Florida. My dad was an airline pilot, but he also invested in single family homes on the side, mostly doing some flipping. And so some of my earliest memories are going with him, looking at houses, watching him paint houses. And of course, I hated it at the time as a kid. I thought it was so boring. But that carried over for me. And now I'm a landlord myself. I own a couple houses here in Portland, Oregon. Leveraged the Burr strategy, really into bigger pockets, community, things like that. And really, we all know this now, but my father kind of taught me early on that real estate was one of the best vehicles for wealth, right? Despite my interest in the space, never really worked in real estate per se. I graduated college in 2009, right in the middle of the recession. Didn't have a lot of job options at the time. And my degree was in journalism, but I didn't want to be a journalist. So the skills that I learned, not just how to write succinctly, which has proven to be a good professional skill set for me, but also just kind of how to talk to people who didn't necessarily want to talk to me. I think that translated fairly well into sales. And at this point, I've led business development initiatives and designed go-to-market strategies for a couple of different companies. Earlier this year, I really jumped at the opportunity to join Scylla, which is a money API.
Well, that's great. Interesting how you came out in 2009. I would think that would have scarred anybody from wanting to really pursue real estate. We were everybody, especially, you know, I know you're in Oregon now, but, you know, Central Florida was just ground zero,
right,
for a lot of the carnage that happened back then. And it's candidly somewhat what some days is still fresh in my mind because we were in the, you know, in the title space at the time. And we literally flipped from doing closings to assisting with asset management groups on how to either help them with foreclosures or help them manage the portfolio to sell it. So these are banks that had to take these properties. So it was and that was like 50% of our business. It was really a crazy time. You know, hopefully I think we've learned a lot from those times, and, you know, a lot of people look at and see these values going up.
Right.
And candidly, there's definitely some concerns I think that we all have around valuations, but the underlying and the underpinnings on the financing side have definitely changed, hopefully for the better. But well, let's talk a little bit about Scylla and what you all do. I think it's a really interesting company. You could talk maybe about how it was sort of founded, the roots of it with neobanking and so forth, and then really where you all are, what space you've sort of carved out for yourself in today's. And then what I'd like to do after that is we're going to dive in and talk about some of the interesting projects that Scylla is involved in. So, but just give us a little background on Scylla API and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think Scylla, when you boil it down, we make money programmable. Our API is really just that perfect intersection between banking technology, financial technology, and blockchain. Right. And we have a fully compliant and secure infrastructure that really revolves around a digital wallet ecosystem. Like if you're a startup or if you are an established company and you want to figure out a way to move money digitally, we can help you build legally compliant fund flows that will streamline transactions and get you to market quickly. We have a lot of companies that come to us primarily for like our ACH on-off ramps. To help develop those crypto use cases in which you're using our ACH on-off ramp to get into the blockchain. I think it might be worthwhile for your listeners to maybe just help define what an API is. An API stands for Application Programming Interface. It's essentially the back end of a particular feature on any given app or a website, right? So any app that you use, especially if it deals with money, you're likely working with an API. And so in past stops in my career, I've worked with several different APIs. And whenever I think about hiring them, whatever the value it is that it can bring to your business, I think it's like hiring someone to run that team for you. So if you're a company who's hiring one, you still need developers on your side, but there's a lot of the heavy lifting that can be done by the API itself. So you don't have to recreate the wheel and develop certain features yourself. One of the best examples, I think, of an API that maybe your listeners have heard of is Stripe, right? Stripe,
yep.
Super popular. They're an e-commerce API, kind of ubiquitous in the e-commerce space. While Stripe can satisfy like your basic online transactions, with Scylla, you can build really complex fund flows so that you can move money and ideally avoid money transmission licenses, which for a lot of people is very challenging.
And so give us some context on the speed and execution of this transmission, because I think that's, you know, a lot of the things that we talk about on the escrow side is about how candidly antiquated some of the current payment rail systems are. Fraud opportunities that come about due to that antiquated system. So, you know, in talking to you and reviewing your different applications and how Scylla can come into a banking environment and really candidly fix some of those issues with the new technology application called blockchain. So if you don't mind, give us a little peek under the hood of some of that lift that you can provide.
Right, exactly. So I think the best place to start when we talk about this is compliance, right? So
yeah, we all talk. You're talking to a title guy. That's like as I say, compliance has ruined a lot of our great ideas.
Right. I would say that Scylla is a compliance-led organization, right? We put an emphasis early and often on that regulatory framework for money movement, because obviously we don't want to be a part of any money laundering either, right? So
right.
We offer several different features, really kind of starting with our really robust KYC, KYB. We provide the ACH on-off ramps, and then again, that digital wallet ecosystem that supports a white label stablecoin that can provide instant wallet-to-wallet transfers. And so what happens is if I onboard funds using the Scylla API via ACH, the funds are represented in our FBO account with our banking partner. And then what automatically happens is I am generated a wallet, and the corresponding amount, let's say I just deposited $100 into the ecosystem, those funds are now represented digitally within the Scylla API. When we talk about stable coins, this literally is pegged to the dollar amount that is in your bank account. And it's FDIC insured for up to $250K per user. So when a company comes to us, often they want to move money without becoming a money services business. They want to avoid the MTLs in all 50 states, which can take years and millions of dollars to do. So by leveraging Scylla and our banking partner, companies can just kind of sidestep the issue by programming the funds flow so that the users are always in control of their funds and companies never have to hold or custody the funds. And so how does that relate to blockchain? Well, Scylla was initially built upon the Ethereum blockchain, and the Scylla token, which again is like this white labeled, you know, digital representation of the funds that are in our FBO, it can run as an ERC-20 token. After that was designed, the gas fees got out of control, became so expensive. We also run on a standard private ledger now as well. You know, most of the time when you, like traditional companies, need an ACH use case, they just want that streamlined money movement. And if the use case involves converting fiat into another cryptocurrency, we leverage different crypto exchange partners. And the one I'd like to call out is Sequoia, spelled S-E-Q-U-I-O-R, which is another API that we work with pretty heavily that enables Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other like digital asset settlement and custody. So like Chip, I know that yesterday, notwithstanding where you were able to find both a buyer and seller who wanted to exchange in Bitcoin, we talked about the challenges of finding both of those parties who want to transact in crypto. I think that's okay if you can find it, but it's hard to find.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you have the issues of like landing entitled insurance as well. So to me, like one of the real opportunities here, one that Scylla can help with from a transaction standpoint, is to provide that on-off ramp from fiat to crypto and vice versa, so that you can accommodate buyers and sellers who want to transact in cryptocurrency without like requiring the other party to do that.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, I think that's sort of the silver bullet that we are working towards, you know, because if we can provide that capability and ensure it and make it where you have this essentially interoperability where people can opt in and out of how they want to be paid or how they want to pay in, right, then it opens this payment rail system blockchain to really anybody. So I do have a couple questions for you.
Right.
One, you mentioned the FBO. Are you all FBO agnostic, or do you have a primary FBO that Scylla is attached to, and that FBO is who would need to be the essentially the partner for transmission of those funds to be able to use the Scylla token?
So the answer is yes. Really, you have to use the FBO that Scylla is partnered with. So the bank that Scylla is partnered with. Right now, we are partnered with Evolve Bank and Trust based in Tennessee. But we are, you know, there's other opportunities down the pike with that as well. So the bottom line is that if it enters the Scylla ecosystem, that effectively means that Scylla is holding those funds within the FBO and then mints this digital representation of the funds.
Just to sort of clear it up for myself and the listeners. So if I wanted to, I was a Bitcoin holder, mm-hmm, and I wanted to, maybe today you're not as excited, but long-term, we're looking long-term, we're talking about it in full disclosure. This could be, you know, some type of other digital currency, which we know, you and I both know, is being developed in a lot of different architectures. So ultimately, we're going to be moving digital currencies around the payment rail system in the very near future, whether it's a, you know, Bitcoin or whether it's a USD backed, whatever, it's where we're going. So, but let's just use the use case today. Mm-hmm. I have Bitcoin. I want to pay for something, a property. I send it over to you for the conversion into Scylla. So does the party that was going to receipt those funds, would they need to open an account, a digital wallet with Evolve so that they could intake those either vis-a-vis the Scylla and they could convert it back into, you know, fiat currency and or convert it or take it as Bitcoin? Am I following that correctly, or am I misguided in my thought?
No, I think we're on the right track. So it really just kind of depends on the transaction. If the seller is wanting to transact in crypto, or if the buyer is wanting to transact in crypto. But in either case, what's going to have to happen is leverage a crypto exchange partner. And again, I mentioned Sequoia in the past. And so Sequoia is going to be taking the Bitcoin and minting it back into the Scylla API as the stable coin that is pegged to the US penny, right? And so from there, what, and Scylla's bread and butter is to just provide that ACH off-ramp.
That makes sense. Now, question for you, because this really ties into today's world. So there's been a lot of noise, relevant noise. We've got two scenarios that I want to just throw at you, and we didn't pre-script this. So listeners should know Ross was not given any, I'm not teeing anything up. So we have really two scenarios that are both have brought a lot of, will bring a lot of attention to, especially for what we do. So there's the Luna situation, which once again, we would never suggest that would be a stable coin operation that we would be looking at just because of the uncertainty around it. And it's unfortunately proven itself out. But so you have that scenario. And then the other one, though, that's probably a little bit more relevant is Tether. You know, it recently, I think most of us, at least at the surface, felt like, right, wrong, or indifferent, that the Tether had some more chomps to it. And we've seen that it's become depegged to the dollar. So share with me at least your sort of perspective around that, especially for someone who's sitting here. And we have to have that stability. As an escrow holder, we cannot have any variation with regard to the underlying value of the stablecoin.
So I think there's an inherent difference between what is going on with Tether and other, you know, potential stable coins that live on the blockchain and the Scylla token, because really the Scylla token cannot be exchanged really outside of the Scylla ecosystem. It really is just pegged to whatever funds exist within our FBO. So it's not one of these, you know, tradable assets that you can take to your MetaMask wallet and, you know, have it earn yield like a lot of the other
staking it or anything like that.
Right. So there's just kind of an inherent difference there. our stablecoin, the Scylla stablecoin, is simply a digital representation of funds that exist within a bank account. So, okay. Yeah.
So, would Sakura, would they have, if I sent you the conversion, I sent Sakura the Bitcoin because they're your partner, and I said, hey, I've got whatever. I need to fund a $100,000 transaction. It's going to be, you know, I remind all of our transaction partners, buyers, sellers, whomever, even agents, because they get confused. We still settle out in a US dollar based amount. It's an exchange, whether we're talking about euros or whatever, we're still going to end up, the contract is written, the settlement, the ledger, everything will tie back to a US dollar denominated value. So it's just a conversion issue there. So exactly. I come to you in $100,000, and we use a round number, we're taking it to 90,000, we'll say 30,000 in Bitcoin. So I have to essentially provide you 3 Bitcoin, right? And you're going to, through your Sakura partner, You're going to convert those into Scylla, correct? It's going to be a direct line, or is there any other friction point in there?
Not really, but the thing to remember is that, like Scylla, Sequoia is also an API. So this is all just kind of built on the back end of your site, if this is the service that you want to provide for your user base.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So, but, and then let's talk about sort of timing, how quickly, you know, can that occur? And then I know the pricing is a little, you talked about gas fees, and that's been a big concern that has been brought to us by folks involved of, you know, hey, you know, what are we looking at? Because then it becomes a value proposition. You know, you start to really dive into it. And, right. You know, our big play is we want security, we want speed, we want efficiency, and we want, honestly, pricing relative betterment, or that's a terrible word, but you know where I'm going with this. So if the gas fees make that not work, then you step back and say, wait, are we really adding, you know, is this transaction, you know, done better than I would do if I just went into the bank and did it the old fashioned way? So can you speak to any of that?
Right. Sure. I'd be happy to. I mean, the thing to remember about why we kind of moved away from using an ERC-20 in every single case was because of those gas fees, which is why we just kind of established our own private ledger within the Scylla ecosystem. I can't really speak to Sequoia's conversion rate. I do know that it's instantaneous from a timeline standpoint. But then really the beauty of using ACH and all of this is whenever you do that off-ramp, depending on like the pricing model that you sign up with Scylla, it can be as at most 20 cents as a credit out back to your bank, which is pretty incredible when you think about it, especially relative to credit card processing fees or even wires. Yeah, it's all intended to leverage ACH, which, you know, it's got its problems, of course. And we've tried to rectify a lot of that with kind of instant products using ACH by floating funds. But the bottom line is it should be the cheapest and relative fastest way to go based on that price.
And then last thing before we sort of talk about sort of looking into the future, but what thoughts on security? Because, you know, one of the big elements is the, you know, the value of using blockchain, the underlying technology ledger base as for security. Talk about, you know, how this enhances, you know, security, because, you know, one of the big issues that we run into in our space, and it's really top of the fold for any of the title industry magazines and so forth, is fraud, wire fraud specifically. And we see it, knock on whatever I've got here, my desk is cherry oak. No, it's not. It's some laminate wood, but you know, what value enhancement do we get by using this, you know, this system relative to the current traditional system?
Right. I think it all kind of comes down to what users are you onboarding? You know, who's using your platform? And I think I mentioned earlier, we partner with a company called Alloy, and really have worked with them to design, in my opinion, one of the absolute best KYC, KYB products out there. You know, it can drill down to the verifying users via social media and stuff like that. So it's all just trying to use a whole bunch of different sources to make sure that John Smith onboarding funds into your platform, and also John Smith, you know, exiting your platform, are, you know, first of all, a US user, they are who they say they are, and ultimately are not going to be committing fraud within your platform. So I think from our standpoint and any other partner that we work with, you know, we have to do enhanced due diligence on everybody. It's not that we're mistrustful, but again, I said earlier that we're a compliance-led organization. And so security is absolutely top of mind. It's something that we personally use as a priority. And it is not just for cryptocurrency companies, but also fintech in general. It all comes down to trust. And like personally speaking, I want to work with companies that have done their homework.
Yeah.
And one way I can tell if that's the case is by investigating who are the founders, what are their backgrounds, who are their first hires. In my opinion, if they have a solid legal backbone, that is to say, if the company has on staff counsel, maybe a co-founder with a legal background, those are the companies that I want to work with, especially in real estate. You know, as you know, Chip, you need competent legal counsel to get everything right.
Yeah, no, good stuff. And I think, you know, one of the misnomers is I go around and talk about some of the opportunities within our space to really embrace the blockchain technology and the digital currency capabilities. Everybody, you know, there's always the wise guy in the crowd. I shouldn't say wise guy. There's always somebody, lady, whomever in the crowd that raises their hand and says, you know, what about these drug dealers that are trying to buy stuff using, you know, cryptocurrency and so forth? And they don't say it always in that tone, but I think there is definitely this sort of high level, you know, just thought of like, oh, it, you know, there's corruption, whatever. If you really distill it down, when it's done correctly and it's done in this type of manner, it is actually extremely more secure and fraud preventative. And also from a sort of a deep dive, I mean, we do like Patriot Act stuff. And in some cases, you know, depending on who we're working with, you have the KYC AML component of it. Right. But this is actually a lot more granular. And I think enhances all of those things that we're trying to avoid in our industry. So it's something that is really a strength, not a weakness. And I think it's perceived in a lot of cases as a weakness. So
yeah,
good stuff.
Yeah, I saw a joke the other day and it said something along the lines of cryptocurrency is just a new way for thieves to figure out a different way to mess with the system, right? And I think that's general. You're going to have bad actors in any scenario. We have bad actors, like you said, in just like our traditional wire transfers, right? So there's fraud everywhere, and it's just our job to make sure we mitigate it as much as possible.
Yeah, exactly. They always say a thief is going to steal. They're just how far and how much work are they willing to go? So. Right. Well, let's before we get out, and this has been awesome, really good stuff, Ross. You've really, I think, given the listeners a lot to think about. We're going to do two last takeaways. One, talk about a little bit about what you see in the future.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We really didn't get to talk much about like the different real estate use cases that we're dealing with right now. There's a lot that I can share, but there's also a lot that we're just still currently working on.
We won't put you in that spot, but yeah, what can you share? I mean, what some of the things maybe you see right now?
I hate to keep bringing up memes, but I saw a great one the other day. It said, for Web2, if it's not on Google, it doesn't exist. But for Web3, if it's not on chain, you don't own it. Forgot where I saw it. I think it might've been LinkedIn, but I think that's a really great kind of simple way to think about the future of the space. If for me, one of the early problems is institutional adoption, right? The staples in the industry, such as the traditional lenders and the title insurers, will ultimately need their buy-in or at least regulation allowing us to maybe circumvent some of the existing guardrails in this space. So one theory that I have kind of heard to assist in that adoption is to focus maybe on the non-transactional methods to get deeds on chain, right? The goal is to get deeds on chain. I'm a real estate owner. What are my incentives to put my deed on chain? What about refinancing my mortgage on chain? What about HELOCs? And what if, this is kind of a pie in the sky idea, but what if having my house deed on chain, I can leverage it on the blockchain to earn APY like I can with USDC, like on a platform like Celsius. So to me, like the benefits of having deeds on chain, it's not even a transactional benefit. I can use it as leverage to perhaps access more capital in the crypto space, all while earning the cash flow from my renters, and of course, you know, appreciation of the house itself. So, like to me, the opportunities are endless. I'm a creative person. I think that a lot of people in the space are creative, and that's why it's so fascinating. There are new ideas that come through our door every single day that just kind of blow my mind. Through different APIs and like Scylla and other technologies that don't really exist today, we can help some of those ideas become a reality. Like the entire industry, we're all relying on mechanisms that can be improved, and many argue it's broken entirely. And so there are good ways to improve that with blockchain technology. You know, there's really no reason to continue using the same processes that we used 50 years ago, maybe even longer. I'm just really excited about where things are headed right now.
Yeah. You know, my one concern, sort of bring it back into current events, is I hope what's the old baby in the bathwater, whatever, is that this market shift, if you want to call it cleansing, as some people would call it, washout, as other people call it, doesn't cloud or, you know, disrupt some of the energy and the momentum that is really going on behind the scenes. Because I do think, you know, when we go and talk to people, we actually don't really talk a whole lot about cryptocurrency. You know, we really focus on the technology stack right. piece of it, because that's really what is going to ultimately win out. And mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's almost a little bit, if you look back in the early 2000s, predates probably, I'm aging myself a little bit, but, you know, when the dot-com boom was emerging, you know, everybody got so fascinated by sort of the flashy website or what have you, that they didn't really understand, like, the power of the underlying technology, you know, the World Wide Web itself, and how it would ultimately change how we go about our day-to-day lives and how we ingest and transact and the whole nine yards. So, you know, the point being is that, you know, you and I both know the amount of money, the amount of energy, the amount of brain power that is going into building this infrastructure. And that's not going away. Now, there might be some blood in the streets of some of the tech stacks that maybe were not fully capitalized and maybe had, unfortunately, were just victims of the marketplace. But the holistically, the infrastructure piece is being laid down, and it's going to be here to stay. So I think it's important for us in the industry, whether we're in the banking side, whether we're in the real estate side, whether we're in the title side, that we still stay engaged and we figure out ways. You touched on the deed on chain. Right. Believe me, we are all about that and vigorously thinking and trying to, you know, bring stuff to market. And Millennial Title, we want to be a thought leader in the space, but more importantly, not a thought leader. We want to be an action leader. We want to help, you know, implement, and we want to help form, and we want to help, you know, be part of that process. If you look at real estate, you know, one of the things, I was just at a conference and they had the head of Zillow on there, and the Zillow person was getting booed off the stage. Well, you know, unfortunately, Zillow came in and did some things that the industry should have done 15 years ago, you know, in terms of putting the MLS on the open market and not trying to protect it. So I think there's some great takeaways from what you said. So in closing, how can people learn more about Scylla? How can people... Any last minute tips you have for people who are interested in the space? I want to learn more about what you all are doing, or more about just the blockchain API lending, not lending, but money transmission opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, so first of all, feel free to learn more at scyllamoney.com. My email is ross.johnson@scyllamoney.com. As I mentioned earlier, we just have a lot of really exciting projects come through the door. Some of them are fairly buttoned up and they have their in-house legal counsel already, but a lot of times it's just really kind of sketching things out on the back of a napkin, trying to figure out what their idea might look like. I think with our expertise, Chip, you mentioned kind of circumventing some of the MTLs, we certainly have a perspective on that. But most of all, what we want to do is just kind of progress this whole movement forward, and we're happy to help you build it.
That's awesome. Well, man, this has been fun. Always enlightening when I spend some time talking to you. Right. Hopefully we'll have maybe in a couple months, we can circle back. I know you and I'll be working on some stuff together over the next couple months. Good work and keep it going. Thanks again for joining us. This is Chip Ridge signing off. It is my wife's birthday, so a shout out to Carrie Ridge for her birthday.